E-commerce isn't just an aspect of growing a successful wine business, it is crucial. And that's why I strongly recommend working with Offset Partners. As a proudly independent e-commerce technology and brand design company based in wine country, Offset understands the operational nuances and the customer service imperatives that distinguish a great online buying experience from a mediocre one. And that's why leading and legendary brands like Saxum, Arnott Roberts, and Kermit Lynch Wine Merchant choose Offset's proprietary commerce technology platform to power their DTC sales. If you're an allocated winery or a high-touch merchant that values an elegant, effective commerce solution for both you, your customers, and your team, reach out to the smart team at offsetpartners.com. That's OFFSET, partners with an S.com, to craft a better direct-to-consumer experience. I'll drink to that, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
So this past week, I went to a Cabernet tasting, and it gave me the blues. And I think when you get the blues, there's only one way to talk about it. You gotta sing about it. It always happens at big tastings. It's even worse at en premiere. It happens to me, it happens to you. It doesn't take a sleuth to see that I've got a case of the purple tooth. Purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth. Purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth. My dentist thinks that I drink pen ink. When I get those crimson grins, those precious chompers, they marinate in anthocyanins. Purple tooth, a side effect of cabs and zins. Purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth. Gargling with Cabernet can make it go away. Bleach those swallers white with fine champagne. Do what you want to keep the purple tooth at bay. If Lacrima makes you pearly gray. Purple tooth, 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 purple tooth. That Lange tasting seems so tempting. But don't just stick to the Arnais. Cause the next time it visits that shady purple tooth, just rinse your mouth out with dry vermouth. Use Chenin Blanc to get that shine of youth. Some Fino could hit that smile a home run just like Baby Ruth. Purple tooth, 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 dry vermouth. Purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth, purple tooth.
One of the first things I learned doing harvest in California is where to buy wine. And that is Bottle Barn. Classic wines, natural wines, cult wines, up-and-coming producers, excellent vintages, hard-to-source bottles, and daily drinkers. Bottle Barn has them all, and Bottle Barn has them all for great prices. Honestly, I really don't know how they do it. I've seen pricing from Bottle Barn for some fancy wines that is several hundred dollars less than I would have expected. And I've also seen wines for under 30 bucks that I would have expected to have been significantly more than that. Plus, when I get my wine, it's in perfect condition. That's why I do what all the best winemakers in California do. I shop at Bottle Barn. Try for yourself. Use the promo code VINO15 for 15% off your first order at bottlebarn.com. That's VINO15 for 15% off your first order at bottlebarn.com. Louis-Antoine Lute. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Levy?
Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you very much to invite me.
So you traveled to Chile in your 20s?
Yes, I was 22 when I first arrived in Chile in 1998. I was in my way looking for myself, and I decided to cross America, start in Chile, and I've never left Chile, so I still have many places to discover.
But you're originally from France.
Yes, I am born in Brittany, Saint-Malo, which is a port in the Channel, and I grew up between Paris and Burgundy, mostly in Burgundy.
So what was the attraction to Chile?
Well, it was discovering a new continent for me. I never traveled to South America, and I wanted to know it, and I said, where to start, many places. And at the beginning, from the south, it was Chile and Patagonia. So my idea was to go there and then going, driving, walking up to the north and to North America. And mostly I was dreaming about those names like Patagonia, Valparaiso, and all the books with the cruising of the Cabo de Hornos and things like that. So it was like adventure. So I decided to go there and start to look for myself in Chile. And finally, I'm still there. So
kind of like a South American cowboy, yeah, kind of thing, looking, yeah, for that.
Exactly.
And why wine? Where did the wine thing happen?
The wine thing starts in my family. In both of my father's and mother's family were living in the countryside in Toulouse. For my mother's grandmother, she was born in Saumur. Half of her family were from there. And my father's family is from Burgundy. And well, wines and food were our traditions every day, every Sunday. And we have this accessibility of good providers, and it's a luckiness, no? I grew up with that. And finally, I was studying in a business school, a university in France, in Paris. And I had a training period in an English language country. I went to Australia, and they gave me the idea to go far away, overseas. And also all the time looking for wines to discover. It's a good thing to, it's a good way to discover the places and peoples and countries and traditions. So this relationship between food and wines and make that when I was in Chile, I start to work with a French wine importer in the 90s. And he asked me to dispatch to deliveries, to do the delivery. And when I deliver a restaurant and the guy need someone, and he contract me, and I start to wash the dishes, set up the bar, set up the tables, like all the jobs, also the administration, and finally start in the kitchen. And he asked me once to help him to do the wine list, and we start tasting something like 800 different Chilean wines, and I was amazed in 98 that it was all the same something. Some of our were very, very nice, and some of them were exactly the same with many wood. It was the beginning of this...
the wood period?
Yes.
The wood age?
The wood age, exactly. It was in 98, yes. And that's how my first step in the wine things were by the kitchen in a restaurant.
Sure.
And then curiosity, questions, people you met who ask you some question from France, from England, France, and Spanish, and things like that, asking about Chile, about Chilean wines, Chilean traditions. And I was like only able to talk about what I knew about Chile, which was the industrial wines, the wines you can find in supermarkets, or the wine cellars at this time were very few in Santiago. There were like mostly three at this time. And all the wines that the companies were able to bring us to try to sell at the restaurant, because it was a French, very high quality food restaurant. The chef was French, and so it was like one of the best restaurants at this moment. So everybody wanted to be getting, every wine producer. And finally, I studied with a very, very great person's name, Hector Vergara, which is a master sommelier, the first from South America, and first from Chile. He used to live in England, in London, during the dictature of Pinochet, and he left Chile to London. And he was the one who teach me how to taste. And he was one of the best sommeliers in Canada in 92, a very, very accessible and sensitive person. It gave me the first step to taste.
What did he tell you?
Yes.
What did he say when it came to tasting?
First of all, shut up. And the 15 first seconds are the most important. Just write in a paper what you feel and what your memory told you, and then you leave the glass and you pass to another wine, and then you come back to the wine and you read your first impression, and then you, most of all, it was, if I gave you the way I want you to go in, you're going to get in. If you look forward your experience and to build your own experience, you will have the best inspirations. And that was all. So just listen. It was the first time that someone was not like teaching the way to smell the things that he was able to discover in the wines, which if you are not used, it's very difficult. If you have not the nose who is used, if you have not training, it's very complicated to find differences between from Wesa, strawberry and raspberry and things like that. You say red fruit. So it was the best taste. It was the best advice I received, I think. And we became very close. And then I traveled to France with many questions, and I went to visit some wine producers and things like that in France, asking them why their wines were so different between two producers in the same place, like in Meursault or Ceduas in Burgundy, because it was some friends of my family. So, and they told me because of the terroir. I had this. Specific...
You went back to France and you started.
Yeah,
talking
just
to French
visiting every year. I was going back to France.
And you had some family friends.
Yes, yes. My first teacher in wines was my father, my grandfather, and also my father was a customer of producer in Champagne, Chardonnay-Taillé, and also a friend of Michel Couvreur, the whiskey producer in Burgundy, and it was going very. Each month, mostly to visit Couvreur and to listen his story about whiskey, wines, like an open encyclopedia. And he was very kind with me. Always he leave me watching on him working in his cellar. So that was the first experience. Also, my father was a critic, gastronomic in the 60s. He was an editor. So he was always close to the food and gastronomy and wines. He was all the time buying wines. And when I was 16, we were drinking his cellar as crazy. And now we have nothing to drink of this time, but it was our education, I think, that we were very lucky to have good cellar at home.
So you did a couple of vintages in Burgundy, a few actually.
Yes, I did. I did in 99, the first I've done in Chile also, but I went to France for the summer and I stayed in France a month and I helped a guy in Isela, in Ocedures. And then I've done it in 2000 and 2001 again, a few weeks. But it was just an end. I was not very sure that I was able or in the mood of making wines at all. That it bonds with those experiences. But it was not just a dream it was, because I was always confronted with some people who were saying that to do wines, you have to study a lot, you have to be an analog. And then some people told me, no, you need humility and you need work and listening and watching and experience. So that's why I came back from Chile in 2001, 2002 to go to France and see if I was able, if I would like to be a wine producer. Only it was an idea, a very romantic idea for me. Well, I'd be a wine producer, but I don't have any knowledge about that. So that's when I came back to France and I decided to first learn how to prune. And I have this experience, amazing experience, and this wonderful opportunity that gave me Louis Jadot, but mostly Guillaume de Castello, the director of Chateau de Jacques in Beaujolais.
The guy who ran the Beaujolais property for Jadot.
Exactly. And he gave me the opportunity to prune with his team. And he believed that my volunteer was enough to learn. And after months, he gave me more money for my because he told me that I was very good to to prune. So I was very proud, because in Burgundy, the producers I've met and asking them to give me the opportunity to learn the to pass a year with them and learn some things. They told me no, because that will not be rentable for them. So the, all the doors were closed. So I went in another place, and the contact was, the movement was good. So my first experience in Beaujolais, and at this time I did not know anything about what was the natural or not natural wines, which is now, I think, also more complicated at all to know what it, does that mean now. 14 years ago, it was something easier, I think, because finally you are traditional industrial, and you have the farmers, small farmers who were looking for other ways. Now it's there is many big companies who are making natural wines, and that makes some limits of the use, the possibility to use this word finally.
Well, you know what they say. You know, it used to just be Christ and the Jews, and then later there's all these churches that
exactly.
came around. You know what I mean?
Exactly. It's a kind of good image to describe that. And but I was in Morgon and I discovered Beaujolais, and it was a very great experience because I was just with some farmers, and people were very accessible to their knowledges and open to give them and to share them. That I opportunities I did not have in Chile because I was not engineer. At this time, in analogies, so people don't want to explain to you what
they wanted, a trained guy or nothing.
Yeah,
in Chile, in the wine industry,
yeah.
They wanted somebody who'd been to school.
Yeah, so it was closed, you know. And at this time, I did not know anything about what I'm doing now. Finally, I decided to make wines. The opportunity was because I met Lapierre in 2002.
Matthew Lapierre.
Yes, and I was to study how to was the wine thing, but I did not knew if I will produce some wine. But he told me, you have to, you can. I mean, you can learn, and if you have good grapes, if you're looking forward, you're going to set that up. And the opportunity came and decided me that on a trip in Chile, I was traveling there and I discovered very, very, very old vines of Mission grapes, they told me, whites and red.
What were you doing? You were walking around or taking
I was
a hike,
visiting
or?
A big company plantations, and for Capel, which are producing the Pisco. They're one of the brand producing Chilean Pisco.
Sure, it's like a huge brand of Pisco.
Very big.
Right?
And they used to have a winery at this time.
I see.
And I went to visit it and I asked for all grapes that we were driving through the different landscape and vineyards in Elqui Valley and things like that. And someone told me, that's all vines of Mission grapes. That doesn't serve
just out the window. That's the local junk.
Yes. And he asked, what's that? And so he gave me some explication. I went back to Santiago. He told me that they were in the South Maule. So I went there and I visited the vineyard and I asked the owner, he said, is that shit? That doesn't serve for anything. It's for bad wines and things like that. And I asked him if he ever tried to make some good wine with this grape. He said me no. Like actually, that he was not the guy who was vinificating this thing because he has no time to lose.
Right.
And 2 weeks after that, I was flying to France. So it was end of 2001, beginning of 2002. And then I started the studies.
I see. So then you were working the harvest and
exactly
with casting. And so you developed a friendship with Matthew Lapierre, who's the son of Marcel Lapierre.
Yes.
And he encouraged you.
Mathieu and Marcel, of course, yes. From the beginning, first time I went to Morgon and met Marcel Lapierre, he received me like he used to receive many people. And I was with Mathieu, his son, and Mathieu introduced me to Marcel. And Marcel said, but with his hand in his shirt, and was like, what do you... What do you want to make wines in Chile? The only thing they have, it's irrigations and Cabernet Sauvignon and Funking Wood. So I said, no, I discovered something. It's all Mission grapes. I told me that's very interesting. That's something interesting. You should, because if you haven't that in Chile, I prefer you to come to Morgon and we find you some vines, because we need people like you who want to do some things around. So
he was pretty open to you.
He was. And then the year, and then I met him every year during, I had a restaurant in Paris during a year and a half in a break in my life in Chile in 2004-05. And so I was going very often to Beaujolais during the weekend and visiting, and I became friend of Marcel. I was not making wines at all. And in 2006, I went to Chile for my second harvest. And the first with the company we set up, Clover.
Collaboration you set up to make wine in Chile.
Yes. And I start 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10 harvest with Marcel Lapierre. And that is at the end of the harvest 2010. And then I have two more harvests with the family. Now I have three kids and my company is going better. So we have many things to do in Chile. I haven't more time to go to Morgon to work, but it was very, very easy to work with Lapierre. You just have to do what he was telling you. And you just have to accept his critics when he has some. And if you have some question, he was all the time asking, I don't know how you say it in English, mettre, botter la balle en touche, when you throw the ball outside of the lines. He was never answering the question you asked.
Oh, I see.
But he was asking you many things. And so it was funny because I sometimes was asking myself if I was learning something finally. But of course, it was the observation that he needed. He likes to leave you the time to make your own idea also. So I've been in Beaujolais not to learn only to make carbonic maceration on the grapes, but the idea was going 6 years or 7 years in the same place to see how the wine maker spirit during the harvest and the different vintage. It's when you play that the moment that you have many questions you never expect were coming. It's never the same thing because of the natural yeast fermentation, because it's never the same harvest. It's not the same harvest as the year before. It looks like something. That's why all those producers, some of them wrote, like Lapierre, he wrote the 35 different harvests he's done. Mathieu is writing also his different harvests. The grandfather of Mathieu was doing the same thing. That's the memory of Lapierre's process. And it's finally a long experience who gave the possibility to take some decision at the moment when you play. At the end of the harvest, you should have taken the good decision, the right decision to have the good wine. So that's what I was looking for. Then we developed a very sensitive and close relationship with Lapierre. He was considering that I was one of his sons. I was considering that he's my father in the wine things. And like he was for many people, many French people who went there. And he came to Chile in 2008 and he discovered he saw all the vineyards of the vines and things like that. And he was very impressed because he can't imagine that some grapes could have 200-300 years old. So it was funny. It was a very good, it's a good relationship. And they also opened my eyes on many things. And also they were a model and they were a motto. And they never stopped to help and to. It was, I think that the best things I've learned with them is the simplicity and professionalism. That means it's going well for me, I can help you. And I do it with pleasure. And I do it with a result. That's professionalism. So that's the way they are, and that's the opportunity they give me. So that's what I'm trying to do now in Chile, to push some producers who have been for seven generations working the same grapes and the same way, but they are not making wines anymore because they have no markets and they have no opportunities. I try to share the opportunities I get because some people gave them to me, share with me their opportunities. So I have to do the same thing. I mean, it's a circulation. If you make the flow going on, it's easier than if you keep it for you.
But along the way, there was a devastating earthquake in 2010.
Yes. Yes, it has been a tough experience, but it was it's material. There were some people died, of course, in my neighborhood, but we mostly lost our car, house, cellar, many things. But it was only material, and we were very, very helped by some French producer, by my family. So it was an experience. It was a very interesting experience. We set up in 4 years. It took us to set that up because it was easy to make the wines in 2010, even with the mostly not a very good cellar, but because there were many energy of the people who came and helped us. And also it was much more difficult to make 2011 and 2012 because that was a period with no returns of the sales because we don't have many things to sell. There was a period where we make some mistakes with the wines, and we have some wines were not bottled as they should have been bottled. We have some wines that we simply did not bottle because they were vinegar. It was the 2 years, 11 and 12, were more difficult because when you are all the time working and making and you have no money return, sometimes it makes it difficult. But always have this observation of the people around us who pass through the same moment, same experience. Some of them who are still complaining and some of them who are not. And that was the model we were looking for. Also, we have the earthquake in Japan in 2011. We had an earthquake in Haiti a month before Chile. It was human disasters and things like that. Our were very tough, 8.8 in Richter scale, which is very high. But finally, Chile was quite set up, quite strong to set up with that, to confront the reconstruction and things like that. That's the moment that it is behind, and it's always the moment I remind as it's not that important. It was. Money things, but if we have the opportunity to work, we have more opportunities. So, no, I think it's much more complicated as a sensitive producer to confront the how you say jealousy. Excuse me. When people want what you have,
jealousy.
Excuse me, and. Or people want to hurt you because you are doing something.
We call it haters here.
Okay. I have to say that. I have some years with this, after the earthquake, with this feeling of people was not very cool with me. So that was hard. That was hard to pass through because you don't understand. You never understand why people are... able to finally just make some troubles. I've never looked to provoke nobody in my way I'm working. I mean, I've been respectful for the people we worked with. I'm respectful of the people who sell me the grapes. The year of the earthquake, it was the first and most important year to buy grapes after the earthquake. We have lost everything. We received some money to set up our company and to survive. But my mentality was I have to buy some grapes. So this money will go to help some other people, you know? And what do they have? They don't have their house. They lost it as I do, but they have their grape. So we have worked a year to prepare the harvest. So let's do it. And the year after also, even if I lost some wines, and the year after also, and that makes sense. I mean, the mistakes I make, I am responsible for. The earthquake, I'm not responsible for. The jealousy, I'm not responsible for, but it's difficult to say that. Now, it provokes that I'm protecting myself of the people I receive, the people I connect with in Chile and things like that, because you have many people finally just want take you, the producer you're working with, just want to know where you're going. And then after that, they try to do exactly the same what you're doing. I mean, everybody
That's become a problem for you?
No, that was. That was because also I was in the moment, in a period of my life where I was not sure of my decision of making wines because I was quite sad because of the money things. I passed the difficulties, you know, it was like make my brains feeling, I don't know, not good, like bad, like sad, like depressed maybe. So no, I passed through. I think the relationship I have with my customers now is closer. I came since we start with Dresdner, Louis Dresdner, my wine importer, 2 years, three years ago. We were working with them, but from France, because at the beginning we were exporting to France, to our company, and the French company was re-exporting everywhere. And it was higher price, it was different way. You know, our first market was France. Now I'm working in my way, I'm working with North America, and I'm coming 2 times a year, and I'm trying to visit as much as I can the customer, and that helped me to pass through, because you look for people who appreciate you meet people who like your job or who have some question or are frank also. So there is a problem with your wine. In Chile, you have nobody to talk with, because people don't want to share, but they want to take from you, but they don't want to. Exactly. Or the solution is like, you have to do that, you have to do that. So you use this yeast and filtered and this kind of thing. So when you have a relationship, when you are proud and you are received by people who like what you do or curious of what you do, but that gave a much more mood. Good feeling, good mood.
You feel supported by the international community, the international market.
Rather than supported by my wine distributors, by you, people who like to.
Well, you're welcome. Me. You know Thanks. What? I'm kidding. No, but so 200, 300-year-old vine, País, which is Mission, which is Listán Prieto. What's that like? What's that grape variety like as a grapefruit?
You can find some in Texas. You can find some in California. You can find some in Baja California. You can find Mission grape mostly everywhere where the Spanish arrive in South and North America. And the plants looks like it's. You can imagine a gobelet. We said cabeza in Chile. Of very old Censo or very old Garnacha or very old Tempranillo, you can find in Spain or France. I mean, these vines, bush vines, somewhere, bush vines. And actually, some of the plants are very big. I don't know, 2 foot large, 3 foot high, but the trunk is like massive. But it's not the only thing that gave the leaf is as a smaller hairs, like duvet. White duvet on the reverse of the leaf.
Okay.
That's make that you can make the difference with any other grapes. This is the only one I've seen, and I wrote what I've learned. Maybe there is some other. I don't know all the grapes, but in the common grape you can find in South America, the only grapes who have some small light duvet, white duvet on the backside of the leaf. The grapes are large, and color of the fruits is not deep red, it's light red, mostly translucent some ways. Some people told me it's kind of grapes you can find with a Tempranillo. The Spanish choose those grapes because of their rustic profile. What is rustic profile? It's able to grow and give fruits and quantities in very dry situation and not sensitive with a disease and
I see. So it doesn't have a problem with a number of different diseases.
No, because it's large grape. It's not like small pines of the Pinot Noir or Shiraz. It's very, very strong and
so no mildew.
Yeah,
no oidium.
Exactly. So that's why we're not treating at all the Pays, the Mission grapes. What we like about that, it's dry farming. That means there is no irrigation. There is no conduction system. There is no air. It's just bush wine this way, and they gave some good fruits. Now the job, the thing is to work in the pruning and things like that. And this is, we are starting from this year, 2015, for the next harvest, 2015, but we are harvesting in April. So we are pruning for the next harvest. We finished at the end of September. And we are starting to prune differently, not differently, shortly, to see if we have more homogeneity in the color of the grapes when we harvest, to see if we obtain some differences. But we are not reinventing. We are not looking for more kilos. We are not looking for... it's just to try to answer some question we have, because we said that in Beaujolais, if you take a Gamay and you plant it at 3,000 plants per hectare, it gives you very large grapes, fruit, and that's why it's very high density. Chile, it's not that much. It's 5,000 plants to 6,000 plants per hectare, which is good. Sometimes you have more plantations, but different soils, and it's youngest plantation. So we are trying to find some different places to look forward how it's growing. If we have 10,000 plants per hectare, how it's maturating, does the grapes look different between this kind of plantation and this kind of plantation? There's many things to observe. That's fantastic.
Because you've done different terroir bottlings of different plot bottlings of Pais.
Exactly. I start with mostly carbonic maceration in 2008 with 2-3 different places of Pais, Mission grape. And then we had like 5-6 different places with good or bad experience with the wine sometimes, but we lost the wine because we were trying to not to put any sulfites. So in the condition we were after the earthquake with Nocera, it was not very clever to do that. But that the thing. But now it's going. We are the thing under control, working in good cellar and good conditions. So this year I've done like 12 different terroirs of Pais. I think it's the most incredible things about the terroir we can look for, survey, because it's one grape which is grown in mostly in 300 kilometers north-south, mostly 20 to 40 kilometers, 50 kilometers from the sea coast ocean in the Pacific. And you have I'm working with 20 different families who are growing those grapes since many generations. I'm not buying all the grapes right now because I'm buying some of the families are in the same area. That's what I say. But the same grapes, different altitude, different climates, different soil, different grower surely make differences in the wine. That's terroir. I mean, this is the closest thing that I've ever watched in Burgundy. Burgundy, it's a small area. If you take only Beaune and Côte de Beaune and Côte de Nuit, but this part of Burgundy. But even if you take large, it will be from Champagne to Lyon, from Reims to Lyon, like 400, mostly 300 and 400 kilometers. And one grape. With some of them, you harvest at 14.5, 16 degrees, even in alcohol. And you can have some wines who are balanced. I have some friends, small farmers who are doing this kind of things. But also in the south, closest to fresh climates, you can have 11 and have fruit which is matured and balanced.
So the same grape is in a number of different terroirs throughout the same country.
The same country,
and you can define those terroirs through the benchmark of the grape.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. I think the grand particularity and what our customers like is the differences. It's not the opportunity to discover new flavors, to have a trip somewhere, you know, when you are going to taste the wine. So we have four now. I have four in the United States of brand names. Pipeño. Pipeño is the name of the traditional wines the people used to drink between two harvests. We said primeur in France, like the new wines. You drink it just after the vinification and till the next harvest. It's fresh, it's easy, it's not complicated, it's accessible, it's juicy, and it's pure. And this is the wine from the people, for the people, some way, you know. That's the wine that they are not drinking anymore.
Not exported. And yours is...
And nobody's export. And mostly nobody want export Pipeño because it's very bad to say Pipeño in Santiago, in Chile. Pipeño is like bad wines.
Like not classy.
Not classy at all. And we try to give a different approach. We're not changing the way it's produced, the way it's grown, the way it's made. We're just bottling it and trying to offer that a different market to give some opportunities to our producers. The idea is to push some of those producers to become winemakers, some wine growers also, not only producers of grapes, but vignerons maybe, like viñateros, some people who are doing the grapes and the wines and have opportunities. That's why I'm glad to be here and to talk about that, and came here in New York to present the Pipeños, because there is differences, true differences between Coelemu, Portezuelo, Santa Juana, Coronel de Maule, not only the alcohol, not only the flavors, everything. So that makes sense. And it's rich to know that you have 1,000 different places that you can choose some good grapes. And
so there's 1,000 places.
Yeah, at least.
And most of the places, the wine is not exported.
No.
So in most of the places, they probably drink the local wine.
Yes, they drink a part. They make wine for themselves, the farmers. Then there is some dealers who come, big companies. If they have some 10,000 liters, they can look forward a big company. If they don't have that much, because usually they are half hectare to 3.5 hectare producers, so small. They are used to deal the wine with local bottlers, who transform the Pipeño traditional pure with water, sugar, and things like that to make a sweet red to deal in the city. So
in the supermarket.
So they have changed the tastes of their wines. It's funny now that when I gave my wines to taste to some people who accept in Chile, they said, "Oh, it smells like the wine of my grandfather." So, yeah, but your grandfather should make good wines. Should drink good wines.
So the tradition is disappearing, and at the same time, probably very few people have ever really compared these kind of wines from the different regions.
I think I'm the only one to do that, because I'm the only one, not the only one to believe on that, but I'm the only one to see the opportunity also. But that's something will make many sense for me. Just because I grow in Burgundy, it's very difficult to make the differences for me between three white terroirs around Meursault. But that's also to try to say, to improve my curiosity. And it's an opportunity. I'm sure there is no more. I'm sure that the best grapes who are planted in Chile are the ones who have been planted for 200 and 300 years, because all the places that they have planted at this time were the places. The decision of planting was something took directly from the tradition, Catholic religion traditions, from the Spanish, from the Cistercian, and things like that. So the Jesuits arrived in Chile with the grapes. They came with the Cistercian reflection of, we plant in this kind of soils, in this kind of disposition, this kind of density, this kind of grape, because for those reasons. And all the plantation you see on the deep soils and things like that have less than 70 years old or 100 years old. For the Mission grapes, I thought. In the region where we are, so from the beginning, the moment of the plantation, there were a decision was taken that to do it there and not here. That is not written anywhere. I feel it's the way they've done it, because I've seen more than 1,000 places with Mission grapes, and all the old ones are this kind of profile. All big family were there, all big monastery, and there were some plantation, and there were some division, subdivision, and family. A guy who is able to say that his family has been grown grapes in 1583. I buy some grapes from him, planted 440 years ago, and they're still producing.
So the root systems are 400 plus years old.
Yes, the root system, but you have to imagine, we don't have phylloxera disease, so there is no risk for the roots. Yeah, to explain, now the main part of the world has the problem of the phylloxera, so you have to craft the Vitis vinifera clone or thing like that, Cabernet or Pinot Noir or Chardonnay, over the roots, who are naturally resistant to the phylloxera. In Chile, there is no phylloxera. So the root still has always been the same for those old Mission grapes. And what happened is that the farmers who are working his field every year and pruning and working the grows the years by oars and things like that, the people were looking on their vines, taking care of them. So if they have an opportunity to have a new plants in the line because one were dying, they was making it by marcottage, which you take a stick of the plants and you put it in the...
You bury it underground and you create a new vine.
And you create a new vine. Also, if on the old plants you have a new plants who are coming in from the old roots inside the line, the guy leaves these plants on the old roots. So it's a new plant. Shortly in 2 or 3 years, it needs more roots. So it starts to regenerate new roots, born on old roots. And there is a regeneration of the roots, of this root system all the time. So I was sure, because I was imagining that old vines are very, very big, developed root system. Yes, it is, but not that big, because also we are in a very, very compact soils. So that make complexity and difficult for the roots to go very, very far away. So there is a way that it survives by themselves. I think that it's possible to have 17 meters of root system if you have not that strong soils, but you also produce more grapes. So I think that we have many, many things to survey these old Mission grapes. Actually, there is 4 or 5 different Missions, we say. There is the Black Listan, the Listan Prieto. We gave Mission grapes, Negra Criolla, or the different names. Listan, you also have Moscatel de Alejandría, which is considered as a Mission grape. Pedro Jiménez and Torontel, which is not exactly the same, but maybe Chasla, they said in some places, they also said, they also call it Corinta. All these kind of grapes has been introducing by the missionary. So they are the missionary grapes, but
some are white, some are red.
Yes,
different kind of fruit.
Mostly whites, and there is one red, which is the Mission. You find it in those different places from Texas to Chile. So it's a long terroir. Actually, I'm starting to do some wines with a family in Baja California.
Oh, okay.
And my next step, I'd like to go to Peru. Valle de Ica and the place where they have the Pisco, and I would love to try to make some wines over there with Mission grapes also.
Do you think that a lot of times Mission has been used for making Pisco?
No, but a friend of mine who's been there for the Pisco thing told me that in some places they surely use it because they are not making red wines. So, but nobody told him the answer.
And is the farming generally the same? Or is it different?
I don't know. That's what I want to see. It's the thing I've observed in Baja California is the same. Bush wines like Cabeza or Gobelet growing, dry farming, no irrigation. Larger plantation than Chile. Maybe because there is less water in Baja California than Chile during the year. Even if the temperature could be the same, it was like 2 meters... to 2.50 meters, the distance between each plant in Chile, it's mostly 120. But there, in those conditions, surely because of the dry condition, they need more space for each plant.
So is País typically a terroir reflective grape? Is it one of those grapes where you can really see the differences on terroir?
Yeah. But that's what I feel about the 4 different Pipeño we have now around them are truly different.
They taste different. So, and so apparently.
I have 6 different, in the same vinification also, which is important because if you have a different vinification for each wine, it's sure that you have differences. But for the same kind of vinification, you truly, and you find the terroir, because there is. I've been for 5 years making wines from place, and I've been for 5 years making wine from a place named Coronel de Maule, and now I have this Pipeño from Coronel de Maule. It's mostly the first good one I bottled, because the other one I have problems for the bottling. But when I was tasting the wine before I make the mistakes, it was truly, you find the terroir of Coronel. It has some herby, people say farming flavors, and it's every year the same. And it's from the same place. So from Trujillo, there is some common thing. From Kenewa, you find them. So, and mostly in Chile, which is different than in France, or Europe or North America, we don't have this much of influence of climates, differences between 2 years. Mostly we are harvesting the same week, the same grapes every year, because the climate is different. It's irregular, which is... I don't know if it's a dream for a wine grower in France or not. I think when I told them that I've never had a problem of maturity, never had a problem of frozen, never had a problem, they say, I have a problem of that, of that, of that. Every year. So, no, there is an expression of terroir. But I've been in the beginning. It's like new. To give you an image, it's just like we just... harvest the first impression, which is interesting, is that many people is now believing in the mission grapes in Chile, the Listan Prieto. So there are many people who start to put some mission grapes in their bottle. So there is something will happen. Who is going to make very interesting the next years? Because Concha y Toro, those big companies, San Pedro, and the other one are bottling mission grape with very high price. High price because they are higher than my wines. I haven't tasted
more wine. Expensive than yours, really.
Yeah, more expensive than my wines. And but it's funny because all of them wants to be the first. I mean, they're saying we are the first to bottle this kind of grape. Well, other people say, no, it's Antoine. And I have to say, it's not me. The first... the winery was in Chillán and was exporting also. And also the first organic wine was made with mission grape in 1999 by the Cooperativa de Cauquenes, Lomas de Cauquenes. And that's one of the first one I've tasted make with Pais, and it was wonderful.
Oh, was that kind of an inspiration benchmark for you?
Yeah, in a way. I've tasted it after I start to make some wines. I mean, when I first vinified some Pays, I was absolutely not sure about the result. So I bring some bottles to France, and that the people in Bordeaux told me that it was the most interesting one I have. I was not able to see the differences and the capacity, the goodness or the luckiness that I have in front of me. I was super perplexed about my wine. And that people who have experience, who smell some differences and flavors, who told me that it was interesting. And I have to believe them. I mean, if Jean-Paul Thévenet told you that, if Marcel Lapierre told you that, if Pierre Auvernois told you that, if Philippe Pacalet told you that, and you like the wines they're producing, you say, okay, they have more experience, no? So that's what it was. It was a test. It was this simplicity to have some people tell you, yeah, it's interesting your blend, it's interesting your Carignan, it's interesting your Carmenere, but this is very interesting. I've never smelled a wine like that. And that's for that I started to, and I'm, that's for that also that I want to go, because I have those friends who are making Morgon, Chiroux, Brouilly, Côte de Brouilly, the same grapes, different terroir, different wines. And that's truly what it is fascinating. And I have the age, I'm 38, it's the moment for me to do that. I don't know if you ask me if it's my, what I want to do, this kind of difference, no. I would like to find the place that's the place.
That's the place. That's the place for me. I'm going to buy that place.
That place.
Those are my vines.
2 hectares, and I do the wines, and I'm concentrating myself with this, and I do it differently, and try to make it the best as possible.
Yeah, but you're also like the nomadic winemaker, right?
Yes.
You like traveling around. I mean, come on.
But of course.
Right. I don't think you're ready to.
No, but the thing I'd like to be not... that's why I say I want to push some people to do. It's not my grapes. I'm not the owners. I mean, I start to buy the grapes from those old farmers because they are old. The grapes are wonderful, and they have nobody. There is nobody in the family who wants to do something. And now there is one of the great news: a guy who said to his grandfather that he wants to start to work with him, because I gave good money to the grandfather for the grapes, and the grandfather now is proud of these grapes. He's proud of the wines we are making with. And finally, there is money to make some young people who start to work with him, and he's. It's just, and the guy is an engineer. He works, he studied for that. He was in Santiago. But he saw the opportunity, and I think that's the first step of something different. I mean, if those people want to make their wines, I mean, I'm developing the reputation because they are working the grapes. I have the context for the commercialization, but tomorrow it will make sense for my wine importers to say, cool. There is a wine grower. I mean, if it's happened because of me and he's doing the Pipeño Portezuelo, I will stop to do the Pipeño Portezuelo, but I have start with him. I buy him the grapes. I believe in his wines. I believe in his way, in the way of working, because what I really like is to share with those people. I have nothing to teach them. I have to learn about of their simplicity, their humility, their outstanding work, because when you are paid 10 cents the dollar for 1 kilo of grape and you produce 5,000 kilos, you win nothing. But even because of this price, you still go to prune, you're still not using chemics, you're still working with your horse, you're still working with your hand, you're still harvesting. And some people arrive and said, it's $1 the price. I pay you $1. They make the first reaction is they take the money and then no news. And they wait for you the next year, you know. But during the year, if you did not appear, the guy is going to produce 3 times the quantities and not working. So you going and you follow them and you explain that you want to pay them this price because
they're doing the proof.
They're doing all those things. And finally, the guy has 3 hectares. And if he's making $15,000 because of his 3 hectares, it's much more money than $1,500 for 3 hectares and the same cost finally. And that makes sense because he will work and 2 months mostly to produce that. And it's a really, really, really good pay for money for 2 months of job. It's a good salary. It's a dream to have my own small vineyards. If you ask me, what would be my biggest promotion? That someone calls me from Burgundy and tell me, don't you want to take care of my company, of my growing, of my wines? That's a thing I think I will never escape. I will try to do it. I will be very, 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 very afraid, because I'm buying grapes in a place where we don't need to take care that much about her because of the climate we have, which is mostly perfect. It's dry and the vines are old, so they're making not that much of quantities per hectare. If you ask me, I'd love to. It's not my way. It will happen. It's maybe not. But if I'd like to have one special part in Chile with Mission grapes, and small parts, vinifig, something very special. But I will follow the idea to share and find more and move. That's why I want to go to Peru. I want to go to Bolivia. A friend of mine went and told me that he finds some old missions. I want to go to all those places because I'd like. And that's only for curiosity. I'd like to understand more about the grapes and the growing in dry farming in those very strict and arid conditions. It needs also to go to Spain, and I need to go to Canaria, where it's from the grapes. And because I really like this story, it's part of the human history. So from the grapes, from now, going back to Spain, I mean, looking for I want to go to Texas and visit all these old Mission grapes that some people told me a month ago when I was there. There is Mission there. I went to Baja because people told me that they were. And there is many, many other places. That's also a way to travel, a way, of course. But the idea of the small and respectful winemaker in his own cellar and the discretion of what happened behind the wall in this cellar, this something like private, and it's yours. You have to prune, you have to do it, because finally that's at the least of the things I'm doing. I mean, I'm not the grower. I'm most an economic producer, because I buy the grapes and I deal the wine. I make the wine, but I sell it. I'm not in the growing part, and that's what I really like. That's why I said, I mean, I'm just through this history in Chilean wines, because if I disappear tomorrow, maybe I will have start something, and that's what I would like to leave. But I will not have been a wine producer, a wine grower. And that's something different. That's because when you have to take the, you have to prune, when you have to do that, that's the truly best things for me. And that's what I have no time to do. That's why I would like to have a small place to be not only a nomad.
You also make some Muscat. What's that like to make white wine?
It's much more difficult to make white wine because I have some idea. I have some souvenir of whites when I drink them. If it's not, and perfection, of course, it's relative, but make a very good white, it's something truly deep. I've tried, I have some good experience. Not that bad. Some people told me, but it's a good wine, even if it doesn't taste as a Chardonnay. But it's a good wine, so that's the way. I've tried with Muscat, which is very complicated because it's very flavor. If you pass through the maturity, you have to do something else. If you are over matured, you have to wait maybe to make sweet wines. But I'd like to dry white, so you have to harvest at the moment where the flavors are not dominating all the wine, which is because it's very close. You can, if it's too flavored, it's like it killed the pleasure, I think. So I've tried, and I think the best way to do as Pipeño is a skin maceration, fermentation, but very short. So you don't go to the orange color. I also do maceration, larger maceration, and I have the orange wines. But it's a test. I have 4,000 bottles of two different wines. I'm going to test the market if the wines are accepted. But you need more technology. You need more... whites need to be very, 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 very precise at the moment of the harvest when you cut the grapes. Because if it's too low, if it's too late, you have wines who are not well balanced, not deep. No, you can leave many things in the grapes in the vineyard if you harvest too early, and you can lost many things if you have harvest too late. So Muscat is a new experience. It's whites. I find a very old vineyards of Pedro Jimenez. Sadly, they leave 100 plants. 2 years ago, they throw away like 2 hectares. And very old Muscat also. I find some old Semillon. I done it in Tinajas, old amphoras. But it's very symbolic because it's 400 liters, 600 liters. And when you arrive to these quantities, it became serious. When you make 400 liters of wine, you say, I'm going to bottle that. Of course, it becomes serious because you have to. It's not an obligation, but you have to put a better price. You can put a better price. The temptation is deep. So it's able. It's well if you do it with your customers. And you, I like to ask my customers what they I don't want to arrive with a wine saying, we have to deal that. What can I do with that? What do you think? Is it good? Is it more than good? Is it pleasant? Can we have a better price? Because the idea, of course, I buy it to the farmer, the price, it's also to have a feedback for him. It's not in the contract with him, but if I get to have better price in my bottles, I will pay back the guy to make sense. That makes sense for me, for him. It's like fair trade with no labels.
And it probably keeps the vines on the ground when they might pull them up and plant something else.
Exactly. So it's white, it's new, and there is many, many places. And I'm just looking forward how the Chileans are making their traditional pepino, which is the skin fermentation, because they have no press. So they have to smash this time and they have to do it with...
They have no press.
They have no press, so you need to make the juice at when you feed the tanks at the beginning.
So you just stomp on it real hard.
Yes. You can find, I have in my webpage, there is a video. It's a small postal card about what is a pepino style. And we have some basket. We empty the harvest in that. We smash done with by feet. All the juice go in the tanks. Then we destamp the skin and the grapes, and the skin is going in the fermentation tanks. And that maceration is starting to ferment exactly at the same moment you're feeding the tanks. After 12 days or 13 days, it's finished. And you still have the cap in the tanks, which is on the top of the wines, and it decanted. And the people at this moment take out the wine and it's ready to be drunk. And there is no press because and at this moment, the wine is yellow, just perfect. The color is not orange. If you leave 2 days with the skin in maceration and you punch down one more time and the skins macerate one day, it became start another process. So that's the way. The idea is to discover. It's difficult to make good wine with Moscato or Muscat. It has been for everybody. And then also it's large, very large grapes. So we're going to look. It's a new approach. I can do it because I have a better cellar also to do it. But I like the way the Chileans tradition pepino are making. I really like it. It's easy. It's clever. It's smart.
The peasant way of making wine. The local way.
Yeah. Yeah, I start from very the opposite with the carbonic maceration. And my first meeting with Joe Dressner, he asked me, why are you making only carbonic maceration? It's make the wine all the same. I said, yeah, but we are in Beaujolais, you ask me that, are you crazy? And he was right because he was right to ask me why I did not knew at this time. This was the only answer I had, is because it was the only thing I used to know to how to make wines. So it was difficult to make white with carbonic maceration, and there is not many sense. But from there, I survey. I think Joris Neyer, Marcel Lapierre, and some producer I met also traveling with them around said, finally, it's you. And finally, it's the same thing for everybody. Even if you are a son of a wine producer, it's to make your own way. And finally, to find your way to make the wines you like and to make the wines deeper and to take all the benefits of the good works which is done in the vineyard and also all the benefits of a good harvest and try to bottle it. And finally, the pepino, the first and most traditional, which was exactly the same, I think, for 20,000 years. That's what is going giving a very good result in the Mission grape. Easy result, very terroir. It's short maceration. It's easy wines. It's light. It's to drink now. I think that if you are starting different, you can build, it's very good grapes to make some blends. But you have many, many many ways to see it. We do some blends. We said at least 30% of the wine is Mission grapes. So that makes difference with all different blends from everywhere in the world. Maybe we can go with 70%. You can also play with 3 or 4%. I don't know. The thing is, if you want to give a different character, that was the idea when we started of our wines, use the Mission grape because there is nobody who was using it. So that was something which was important at the moment to bottle our first wine. It was like make it sure that it will not be Chilean in the way of, it's from Chile, you know, like, no, it was more people were tasting it. No, that's not from Chile. No.
That was my response.
And that was funny to see that because that make it very, very exciting. I invite people to go there and try to do some stuff there because it's not easy, but there is accessibility. There is a very good tradition. That's why I'm trying with some of the producers I'm working with to make the wine with them in their cellar. And when I buy the grapes, but I make the wine with them, so that gives them more job for the harvest. They help me. And then I take the wines from their cellar to my cellar and I bottle it in my place. And I invite them to follow the wines to see that we are not doing anything else than they used to do. And we are exporting. That things is how we are creating some new producers, new wine growers. And that's the most important thing. I mean, in the way it's going now, in 10 years or 20 years, they will not have many. I mean, there's 10,000 or 15,000 hectares of Paish Mission grapes still in Listan Preto, the red wine. In 20 years, it will have 1,000.
You think it's getting pulled up fairly frequently?
Yes, because there is no money to make with it. There is no, and we are creating something important there. That we are creating that those, this, I think when you have 300 years old vines and you are free to throw them away, it's a crime. And nobody said nothing. You just have to, and if you want to plant after that, wood is a thing, but if you can also take away the grapes and plant Cabernet Sauvignon, that's a crime. That's something strong. And I think stupid. Why you throw the grapes away and plant other grapes?
Louis-Antoine Lute, he's taken a nomadic path along the route of the Cistercians from France to Chile. He's making tests, and one day he might settle down. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me with you.
Louis-Antoine Lute.
All Drink to That is hosted and produced by myself, Levy Dalton. Aaron Skella has contributed original pieces. Editorial assistance has been provided by Bill Kimsey. The show music was performed and composed by Rob Moose and Thomas Bartlett. Show artwork by Alicia Tenoyan. T-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and so much more, including show stickers, notebooks, and even gift wrap, are available for sale if you check the show website, alldrinktothatpod.com. That's ILLDrinktothatPOD.com, which is the same place you'd go to sign up for our email list or to make one of the crucially important donations that help keep this show operating. You can donate from anywhere using PayPal or Stripe on the show website. Remember to hit subscribe or to follow this show in your favorite podcast app, please. That's super important to see every episode. And thank you for listening.